the smartest show in the Bay Area?
You guys are an intellectual feast for the smart sports fan in the Bay Area.
Wow.
You're pretty much the smartest guys on the radio.
I agree.
Good Lord, how big is your ego?
Are they the funniest show in the Bay Area?
Give it a laugh. Come on. You're a funny guy. Come on. Give me a laugh.
You are funny, dude.
Hit that S again.
Are they the coolest show in the Bay Area?
And no white boys. They cool.
That's what people are saying.
You guys are phenomenal.
This is one of the most perfect ways that I could end my day, getting a chance to talk to Mr. Mark and Dan, you know?
We'll let you be the judge.
Oh.
All I know is it's a couple of Bay Area boys talking sports.
I know nothing.
Thanks.
It's Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, let's go. How about this? This is something a little bit different. And don't worry, it's still Niners Chiefs game week, and we're going to get you ready in all of the different ways. But I didn't even know any other way to start this other than to say this is an honor to be sitting where we are right now.
I have goosebumps.
Yeah, as a
man who worked for that station and worked with this man, not really for that man per se, but a guy who admires broadcasters and admired this broadcaster, and now he's on my show.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stan, you're on my show now, Stan.
That is true. I am on your show. I'm honored. Thanks for coming out here today, you guys.
Well, thank you for having us. And just for those of you just joining us, we'll do a quick table setter here. We are live in Pleasanton at the John Madden compound. This whole setup here is something that he created along with his family so that they could do a lot of projects, but namely so that every Sunday they could all get together and watch football. And what a cool thing that it also serves as the backdrop now for the launch of our next guest right here on the River Islands guest line, Stan Bunger, and your new book, Mornings with Madden, and only hours from now you will be talking to assembled ticket buyers, hopeful readers, and also a cast of other NFL who's who talking about all of this. So congratulations.
Thank you, man. Do you ever have a moment in your life where you're looking down at yourself saying, this isn't real?
Oh, all the time.
Well, that's happening to me right now because, I mean, I went into my hometown bookstore this morning in Alameda, and there's my book on the shelf right over there by Malcolm Gladwell's book.
Nice.
You know, yeah, it's a pretty good neighborhood. And I'm just so thrilled. But for me, what this is the culmination of a journey that I was just lucky enough to stumble into, to have John Madden, the John Madden, as my on-air radio partner every morning at 8:15 on KCBS for almost 18 years. And then to have had a treasure trove of recordings of those broadcasts, 4,000 or 5,000 of them, to be able to transcribe those, look through them for bits of wisdom, and then try to tell the story of why in the world was John Madden, the guy, you know, who had the Super Bowl ring and the Pro Football Hall of Fame, and as you were describing moments ago, the genius who really set up what it meant to be an analyst on NFL broadcasts, and the video game, and the commercials. Why would he show up every day to do Bay Area radio with guys like me?
So what's the answer to that question? Because I was there, actually before you were there, with Al Hart in the late 90s as a production assistant, and it was a thrill for me to call him and say, you know, John, are you ready? And he was doing it then, and it literally was every single day. So why did he have that connection to that bit? It was either 3 minutes or 10 minutes or somewhere in between, and he did it every day.
I asked him a couple of times, and he would always say, I do it so that my mom knows what I'm up to. That way I don't have to remember to call my mom. And so I'm thinking, well, you know, if his mom passes away, this is over. And then she did, and I thought, well, that's probably going to be it. That was just a line. You know, it gave him a reason to get up in the morning. Members of his family will verify that. Hey, John was not an easy riser. It also gave him a way to let loose with whatever was on his mind. Because you got to remember, you know, when third down and four, and when the play is over in the NFL, he's got 12 seconds to say, this is why the screen pass failed, and you draw on the telestrator. When he goes on the radio with us, he can go on as long as he wants. And sometimes he would push the boundary as we're trying to wrap it up and get back to traffic and weather together on the eights.
Nice.
He'd say, no, wait, Stan, you know, another thing. Do you ever wonder why? And off we'd go.
I wonder if you have any insight on how this even came to be at the outset of it, because we all know, if you're in this business, if you tried to pitch to someone today of any name value at all,
oh, God,
here's my idea, we want you to come on every day. click. That's it. This is not even a conversation. You're lucky if you get someone to come on every week, maybe once a month. How do you know how this was, how he was approached,
yeah,
and how that conversation went?
I do, and I'm lucky enough to have had a college buddy of mine, Fred Green, was a production guy at KYA 100 years ago, literally in the early 80s. And Gene Nelson was the morning guy back then. Gene Nelson was, you know, as big as they got in the market. Fred was a recording engineer at KYA. When John would come in to record these network features, they were running on, you know, syndicated stations. And because Fred's the kind of guy who likes to talk and John's the kind of guy who likes to talk, they'd wind up talking. And so this went on for a while. John, meanwhile, had been on with Gene Nelson a few times as a guest, you know, Coach Madden. One day, they get the idea, Fred does and others, that maybe John would do something more regular with Gene. So they meet in the hallway, John and Gene. They're both limping because John had just broken his ankle, stepping off the curb awkwardly. Gene had run a marathon the day before. And they walk up toward each other, and Madden says, "You're limping." And Gene says, yeah, I'm limping. Why are you limping? Well, you know, I ran a marathon. Madden goes, well, how long is a marathon? Well, it's 26 miles. And he goes, what kind of a runs 26 miles? That's how they started. And so what that formed was a bond. And they realized, he'll just come on and talk. It didn't have to be about the game the night before, the game coming up on Saturday or Sunday. They just talked. That went on for 12 years. Mm. And so that's how it started. To your point, you're exactly right. You couldn't pitch that. You couldn't draw it up. You couldn't. There's no elevator pitch version of that. It was organic. It worked because these were two guys who got each other, who were at the top of their game, and it just went on from there.
So when you take it over from Al Hart, when you got the anchor chair, which was early 2000s, as I recall. And,
yeah, 2000, know, summer of.
You get the bit, and then Steve Bitker joins you. What was the mix of sports and non-sports, and how did you try to navigate it? Because I know the clock at KCBS, and like you said, you know, you've got business at 25 and traffic at 28, and John didn't really care about the clock. So how did you go about navigating that whole thing?
He kind of got it. And you know, John's son Mike told me a great story. I hadn't heard this till after John passed. On the morning of his first KCBS broadcast, somebody from the newsroom, maybe you, calls him up and says, Coach, you know, it's KCBS Newsroom. We're excited to have you aboard. It's your first day. Now, remember, we're an all-news station. Things go pretty fast here, so you got 5 minutes. At which point, John looks over at Mike Madden and goes, watch this. And so poor Al Hart, you know, is like the clock is chasing him and the boss is against the window pointing his finger at him to wrap it up. And, you know, John somehow senses this through the phone line and waits and waits and waits. And just as Al's like, okay, John, we got, hey, you know, Al, and another thing.
It's incredible.
And it was just like that.
And I was telling Mark before that Al was not exactly a sports guy.
No.
So, you know, Al and John, the mix of the two was so perfect because, you know, John knew that and wouldn't try to hammer him with, you know, third and four like you're talking about. It was more about humanity. And Al Hart was probably 107 pounds soaking wet. John, you know, is this big football.
There's a photo that's out there right now on the video wall that's playing in preparation for the event of John holding, standing next to Al. Al is holding a giant piece of pineapple that had been grilled for the event. And you've got Beauty and the Beast, or I don't know what you got, Skinny and the Beast is what you got, and a big piece of pineapple in there.
Stan Bunger is our guest. He is the author of the new book, Mornings with Madden, and we are out in Pleasanton at the Madden compound where we are celebrating the release of this book and celebrating John Madden. And getting ready for this, Stan, Dibs and I have been talking a bunch, and we can't come up with a name that has had like a bigger effect on more aspects of the game of football than John Madden. How do you sort of react to that when you have that thought?
You know, I wrote a full chapter in the book about it, but I think you're absolutely right, Mark. If you want to draw the chart of influence in the NFL over the last 50 years, at the center of it all is John Madden, because he was the soul of the game. He was obviously a great coach. I mean, okay, let's check that part off. He was an incredible reason why people became football fans on television. I've met so many people, I'm sure you guys have too, over the years, who came from other countries or cultures and became American football fans because they learned the game by watching and John Madden taught them. Now, John wasn't saying, now, sit down, kids. Here's how we draw up a, you know, trap play. He explained it in a way that was accessible to everyone. Men, women, foreign people, kids, it didn't matter to him. He was an emissary for football. And then he became the conscience of the game. You know, I recall really vividly one morning when I referred to Brett Favre having had a mild concussion. And John stopped me right there and he said, what are you talking about, a mild concussion? You don't know what kind of concussion he had. He had a brain injury. And John got angry about people talking about little dings or having their bell rung, that kind of stuff. Well, that's all now. We understand that now. But John was way out ahead of that curve. He, after leaving television, became active in what they call the Madden Committee, where rules changes, safety changes. He didn't win all his battles, but he won most of them, and in so doing made the game better as a business, as an enterprise than it was before he got there. And I think the guy now who I think is carrying that torch is Peyton. Peyton is the new John.
Yeah. Yeah, and he does it with the Manning cast. And we actually were talking about the most beloved figures in the NFL and outside of John Madden, and Peyton might be the one. And I wonder about you, Stan, and your career, and you know, you got toward the end in your retirement about the same time that John stopped doing it, and Steve Bitker, your partner who did sports at 15 and 45, a guy who was a big influence for me as a young broadcaster. What was that like for you to have your career kind of mirror the evolution of John toward the end of his career?
Yeah, it's kind of weird because he left the airwaves in KCBS in 2018, and I hung around until 2021. You got like the last year and a half was COVID, so that's kind of weird. It was kind of empty without him, I'll be really honest with you. And we'd seen it coming. You know, it wound down. He had a health crisis in the 2015, 2016 timeframe. He was away for about a year. And I recall there were conversations with management at the radio station saying, you know, we need to find his replacement. And I'm thinking, that's a bad idea. There is no replacement.
Right.
We'll kind of fill in for him, maybe. And, you know, Mariucci did a bunch of hits. Ted Robinson used to join us quite often. I'm missing some names. Cam Inman. But there were a lot of people who helped out. And at one point, I don't know, I'm not going to use the name, but there was a name, a big name, a really big name, who management really wanted. A Bay Area guy with an NFL pedigree. Mm-hmm. And I walked in and, you know, proposed that to somebody who knew this person really well. They said, don't bother. He's not going to show up every day. To your point earlier,
right.
He's not going to show up every day. He'll find a reason, and he's not a bad guy, but he's busy. And to him, he's not going to feel the joy or the need to do a 5-minute hit every single weekday morning.
Wow.
At 8:15, so we didn't reach out to the guy.
Interesting.
Every single day, dude.
Every day.
Yeah.
Stan Bunger, the book is Mornings with Madden. I wonder, and I'm sure you do, any insight on the development, the start of the video game, and then where it went from there, because there is no way the biggest dreamer in the world could not have thought when it started that this would happen.
Mark, that's true of his entire career, by the way. Every single thing that happened to him just happened. Not because
from the light beer from Miller commercials all the way through the broadcasting.
To be in the head coach of the Raiders. I mean, we've got a video clip we'll play of Virginia, you know, pointing out that before he'd only held any job for 2 years. And then Al Davis hires a guy who couldn't hold a job longer than 2 years to be the head coach of the Raiders. The video game, this is one of my favorite John Madden stories, because he saw, now computers are brand new at the time, but he saw that this technology could speed up the planning for a week's game. If you could run another team's defense against your offensive sets, or you could do the opposite, you know, you could save time, you know, and find things you wouldn't be able to do if you were just walking around on a practice field. So he has this idea. Somebody connects him with Trip Hawkins, who became the founder of Electronic Arts. And Trip was very eager to meet with John. They met on an Amtrak train riding from Denver back to the Bay Area. They talked. And Trip said, yeah, you know, we could do that. I mean, we'll come up with I guess we could probably do maybe 6-on-6. And John's like, no, No, it's got to be 11 on 11. It's got to be real football. And Tripp's going, well, you know, I got to be honest, we don't have the computer horsepower to do that. But Moore's Law says in a few years we'll have enough power and enough memory to be able to do that. John said, fine, come back to me when you can. And what John saw that as was as a teaching tool. He thought he could teach new people about football. He thought coaches could use it for their game planning. He had no idea. I mean, no idea
right.
that it was going to turn into really life imitating art, because now the NFL is full of players who will say right out loud, I learned football from Madden NFL.
Wow.
The blocking and tackling, they had to go learn. But you know, strategy, formations, and all of that,
yeah.
they got it from a computer game. John Madden's computer
incredible.
Game.
Just incredible. Thank you again for having us out here.
Yes, thank
Dan,
you
thank for coming,
you.
Mark.
It's great to have you here, Dibs.
Just
you too,
my brother. Yes, sir.
Not
yes.
just best of luck with the book. Best of luck with the event today. This is a great setup, and we're just thrilled to be here. So thank you.
Well, you're very welcome, and I just hope everybody in the Bay Area recognizes how lucky we were to have had that radio thing with John.
Yep.
The book is an homage to that, and also kind of a yan-yan-yan to people outside the Bay Area who didn't have it, but now, yeah, okay, now they have a chance to kind
now
of
now they can
it.
Read about
yeah.
it. Yeah.
So good.
Great stuff. Stan Bunker, the author of Mornings with Madden, which we're celebrating today. You heard him mention Steve Mariucci. Mooch will be sitting in this room with us in just about a half hour as well. Coming up next, we certainly will open up to your phone calls at 888-957-9570, and wait until you hear this number that is certainly circulating with regard to Kyle Shanahan in close games. We get to all of that next as we get going on Willard and Dibs.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Now back to Willard and Dibs. The guys are live, remembering the great John Madden from his studio in Pleasanton.
Oh, man, that was something else. This is something else. So glad you are with us here live from the Madden compound. Yeah, they're getting the book ready, Mornings with Madden, but the stories are already flowing. Steve Mariucci is going to be along in a little bit. I don't know if I've ever seen you glow like this. Are you pregnant?
No.
You're glowing right now.
I mean, I should probably take a test because I do feel a little bit verklempt and I'm feeling a little bit emotional, but I just did radio with Stan Bunker.
Yeah.
And for me, being in the market now for 27 years and starting working for Stan Bunker on KCBS and knowing Stan and never having done radio with Stan Bunker. And, you know, I did radio with Gary Radnich and I grew up listening to him and that was a whole thrill. And I did, whatever, 5.5 years. So you kind of get over it. And Tony Bruno, as you know, and actually there were times where it was me and Gary, Tony, and you.
That's true. That's
in
a fact.
Like the early
20-something years ago.
Right. Yeah. Which, I mean, the thrill working with you was not as profound as it was when actually you and I worked together in this fashion, but
you don't need to throw me in to sauce me up. It's okay.
I'm not saucing you up, but those were moments where it's like, I like this Mark Willard guy, and then you and I were kind of friends, radio friends, 17 years ago, and now we're radio partners, but I had never done radio with Stan Bunker where he was doing radio and I was not like bulking carts or saying, oh, Stan, that was great. That was actually cool for
bulking
me.
Bulking carts. I'll explain everybody later what the hell that means.
Yes.
But anyway, we are going from bulking carts to letting everyone know that we're streaming live on Twitch and YouTube right now as we speak. So if you want to watch the show and you can see at least a little bit of what John's boardroom looks like, check that out. Twitch.tv/957thegame, YouTube.com/957thegame. That's all powered by First NorCal Credit Union. Yes, Steve Mariucci is going to be along in this room in less than a half hour. We look forward to that. But we definitely want to talk 49ers and Chiefs with everybody as well. And this this got circulated on our little group thread earlier today, and I want to get right to it and put this out to you. You know that I'm not a big numbers guy, and numbers are numbers and numbers are numbers.
Yep.
But I'm not a huge numbers guy. But when a stat, if you will, comes across where you're like, hold on a second, say that to me again, then it is, in my opinion, discussion worthy. And I want to know, and we want to know, what this fact that we're about to put to you, what does it mean to you, and what does it mean for this weekend? Okay? Because one thing I haven't heard anybody say yet is, oh, the Niners are going to blow out the Chiefs. I haven't heard anybody say that.
No.
I don't know if anybody thinks that. I don't know if anybody thinks the Chiefs are going to blow out the Niners either. So if you are going to assume some sort of a competitive close game, then listen to this. This is bananas.
Yep.
All right. 124 NFL coaches have coached 40 or more regular season games decided by 7 points or fewer in NFL history. I know now 8 points is considered a one-score game, but you get the idea.
Yep.
A touchdown or closer, 124 coaches have done that 40 or more times in regular season history. Of those 124, Kyle Shanahan's winning percentage in those 7 point or less games ranks 119th out of 124. He has the 119th worst winning percentage at 378. So 37.8%.
Wow.
Is his winning percentage in regular season games decided by 7 points or fewer, and only five coaches who have been around to be in that many games, only five of them in history, have a worse winning percentage than Kyle Shanahan. What does that do to you when we say that?
It makes me want to throw up, to be honest. And it makes me want to think about all the games where, you know, you think about the Kyle Shanahan era and all those games that have been one score or fewer. And I think about this year, Arizona, one score or less, you lost. The Rams, one score or less, you lost. Minnesota,
one score or less.
You lost. And last year, Cleveland, Moody misses a kick, you lose. Minnesota last year, I think, was one score or less.
It was.
You lose. And I would imagine that this also includes the postseason and such games as last year's Super Bowl.
Well, you can bring the stat did not include postseason,
but okay. You
can certainly bring the history of this. Now, I know they won two one-score games against Green Bay and Detroit last year.
Yeah.
But obviously this is relevant based on at least twice having a 10-point fourth quarter lead against the Kansas City Chiefs, losing both of those games, and here they come to town this weekend.
Yes, and I'm also looking at the Josh Dubow follow-up tweet because somebody asked him, who's at the top of this?
Yeah.
And who do you think's at the top of this?
Don't say it's Andy Reid.
No, I'm going to give you one guess.
John Madden. There you go, John Madden.
John Madden, 732 winning percentage. Yeah. In games settled by 7 points or fewer. And I mentioned this earlier, John Madden is number one all time among coaches who have coached 100 games in winning percentage. So that doesn't come as a big surprise. And I just mentioned that primarily because we are here at the Madden compound. But the Shanahan part of it, I do think that it is something that needs to be illuminated because it's a thing.
Well, last year was a good year, right? That it feel like that was a good year, good regular season last
great
year?
Great year.
Right? Okay. So, of their 12 wins,
yep.
How many do you think, just do this from memory, don't look, I got it up right here in front of me.
Yep.
Of their wins last year, there were 12 of them.
Yeah.
How many of them fit into this category? They won the game by 7 points or less.
I'm just thinking about it in my mind, and I'm not looking at your screen because normally you're across the table where Tim Jordan is.
Super I know we're right. I'm not terribly comfortable being this close to Dibs. Can we say that? Yeah, you can. It's weird. We're like rubbing elbows.
You should count your lucky stars that I not only showered, but I also used deodorant today. Unlike yesterday where...
Why?
Your boy was pitting
Why
out.
Would you ever not use deodorant?
Because some days you just are rushing around with a two-year-old. You don't know what it's like.
No.
You've got teenagers and a 10-year-old.
That's inaccurate. Like, you get out of the shower and you put deodorant on.
I didn't shower yesterday, nor did I use deodorant.
It's just getting worse by the minute.
Well, whatever. You're lucky that today I took care of those things so that you don't have to suffer from an olfactory standpoint. But to your first question,
yes.
How many of those games?
How many wins last year were by 7 points or less?
I'll say zero. I can't think of a one.
You should be right, but you're wrong.
Oh, God.
It was one.
Can I go home now?
It was one, and it was the game where Sean McVay Sean McVegas.
Sean McVegas.
And decided to kick a field goal on the last play of the game.
Stupid.
To lose by 7 instead of losing by 10.
And the spread was 7.5.
And the spread was 7.5. Correct. So there's that game, the second game of the year. All of the other wins were by the way, not just more than 7. They were all double-digit victories.
Ottoman.
Every single one of them. But when we go to close games, and you mentioned some of them, obviously there were only, there were only three games last year, by my count. Forget the stupid one at the end where they lost to the Rams by a point where nobody played.
Twos versus twos.
But outside of that, of their other 16 games, only three of them fall in this category, and they were 1-2. And it was the missed field goal by Moody in Cleveland, and it was the 22-17 loss against the Minnesota Vikings. Almost the exact same score, by the way, that they lost to them this year.
Right.
23-17. But add all that in, 1-2 last year in these close games, 0-3 this year in those close games, but all of their wins are all by double digits. It all brings us to what I think we'd be silly to not address. This doesn't mean that Kyle Shanahan's a bad coach or anything, but I do think that, like, if I were him, I'd be looking at that. Like, what is it about what we do that is so effective, let's say in the first quarter and on the script, and getting a big lead? What is it that we do that suddenly tends to not work when you've got a really tight game in the fourth quarter? What is that? Because this is too much. There's too much evidence now for this to just be like, one of those things.
Right.
It's got to be something.
It's something. And even if you throw out his first couple of years where they were terrible, and Josh actually followed up with that and said, if you throw out the first 2 years, his winning percentage is 400, 40%. Outside of those first 2 years where they were dreadful, and, you know, when you're a bad team, you might lose a one-score game because you're down by 13 and you score late.
Sure.
And you cut it to 6, and so that counts. But even in the last couple of years where they were good, he still loses these games. And so I think about a couple things. One is what we've talked a lot about, where you don't have an offense that's built to come back. So when you trail, it's hard for you to come back because you don't do 3 wide receivers, you don't do 4 wide receivers, you don't throw it all over the place, and you don't usually come back. And the other thing is, and I'm thinking about the Super Bowl last year where you had a big lead and you played a perfect first half and then you made mistakes and you had a punt that hit your guy, and they recovered it, and they scored. Yeah. And it's the little attention to detail mistakes, I think, that are ultimately the things that cost you these one-score games.
We'd love to hear from you. 888-957-9570. Let's go to Joe in Burbank, who wants to weigh in. Hey, Joe, what's good?
Yeah, hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Listen, on your discussion, I'm just curious. Kansas City has Reed, and Reed has Mahomes. New England had Belichick, had Brady. Now, Shanahan has had Garoppolo and Purdy. So I'm kind of thinking about what you're talking about, and I don't know if I totally agree. And the other thing is, you can use any examples like last year's Super Bowl the players lost that game for Shanahan. He had a good game plan. It was 16-6 or whatever. They made too many mistakes. He had a game plan that was good enough to win, but his players didn't come through. So, and you know what's crazy is I'm not a huge Shanahan fan, but I don't blame him. A lot of these losses are not because of him. It's because of the players.
Well, I don't disagree with that, Joe, on a large scale level. But when you bring it up, you're bringing up one game. I mean, if Jake Moody makes the kick in Cleveland, they win the game by 1 point. We all understand that. Obviously, the players do this. But, Joe, if you're talking about something that tends to be very different from the norm for a long period of time, you got to at least look at it, right? Don't you think? Is Joe gone? Joe's gone. I mean, sure, the players are making the plays. If you want to go to the Super Bowl and the Burford goes the wrong way and the Jake Moody misses a kick, you could do that all day long. I'm just saying, if you're looking at this now over a large sample, and there have been some successes. They beat Green Bay in the playoffs. They came back. They beat Detroit by one score in the playoffs, even though that took kind of a garbage time thing from Detroit. But if you're Kyle and you're one thing all the time, and then over a long period of time, your results are totally different in close games, I don't know, man. It just feels like you'd be crazy not to look at it. Kurt Warner said on our show last year, Kyle Shanahan's system is built to get a lead. All right, so what do you do when you don't have the lead? Well, it's not as good.
It's not as reliable, and you rally against Green Bay, which they did, and you rally against Detroit, which you did, and then you had the lead against Kansas City, and you got to overtime, and you chose to take the ball for whatever reason, and we'll never know if it was because he didn't really fully grasp the strategy or his defense was tired or whatever it was, but you took the ball, they were happy you took the ball, and you put Patrick Mahomes in a spot where you want Patrick Mahomes to not be, where it's four down territory. And so he converted a fourth down, he drove down, he converted in the goal line, and you lost the game. So,
I mean, the other point he's making, and I'm going to tiptoe into this one now, okay? I am not going to put Brock Purdy in the same sentence as Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes in terms of accomplishments. But here's what else I'm not going to do. I'm not putting him in the same sentence as Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, I don't know if you remember what he said. He goes, wow, Belichick had Brady. Reed had Mahomes. Kyle's got Jimmy and Brock. It's like, hold on a second. Like, Brock is still very young and has not had the opportunity to build a resume like Brock, like Tom or Patrick. And I'm not even saying that he will. I will say, however, that in his two opportunities, he has gone very deep into the playoffs both times. And I don't think it's fair to stick him in the sentence with Jimmy Garoppolo and insinuate that Kyle's problem in these cases is that he doesn't have a good quarterback. Because he does. He's got a really good quarterback.
That's not the problem at all. And you could look at the Super Bowl last year and you could think about what the problem was in that game. And, you know, many people want to say, well, Brock Purdy had Ayuk open on that play in overtime. And if he just throws it, then they get a touchdown. He can't because the right guard went the wrong way and he was pressured and he couldn't make the throw. And you had a punt return. And I'm looking at the play-by-play again from the Super Bowl because I really want to dive deep, not today, but tomorrow and Friday on that game, because I think that Kansas City is kind of similar to that team. They're obviously different because of their personnel this year than what they had last year, but you remember last year they drove down and McCaffrey fumbles, and so you get no points, and then you're trading punts, and then Moody gets a long field goal, and you dominate the first half, and yet you're only up 10-0 in that game.
Absolutely. And to me, this boils down to one question, and I've heard a lot of people say this, and this is data now. This is data. Kyle Shanahan's offense has not been as effective when the other team knows you're going to throw. And you can sit here and say, well, that would be anyone. Well, it hasn't been. It hasn't been. Does Patrick Mahomes feel like he gets worse when you know he's going to throw? No. When Tom Brady's down in the Super Bowl 28-3, are they like, uh-oh, I think he's going to throw. But let's just stop it. Let's just go all out on that. No, there's got to be an evolution, I think, in those moments where you at least, if you're Kyle, sit down and look at, and I say this as if he hasn't, it's not like Kyle's dumb and doesn't know this, but what is it about your offense that when the other team knows you're going to throw, you can't be as effective as other passing teams in the NFL?
I think it's because they become too predictable. And I'm thinking about the Super Bowl last year where they come out of the locker room in the second half and, you know, they're up 10-3 and it's, you know, you force KC three and out. Then you come out and you go pass, pass, scramble, punt. And then KC punts again and you go pass, 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 punt. So the first two drives where you don't score, you don't move the ball at all, you passed it or scrambled every time. So I do think that sometimes he gets to be too predictable in his formation, too predictable in his sets. And yes, Spagnuolo knows based on personnel and formation what you're going to do. And so I would encourage Kyle to take a page out of Andy's book and think about the game against New Orleans a couple of weeks ago where you threw it to Kelce, and then he threw it backward.
Yeah.
And then you had a play at the goal line where you had Kelce in the pistol, and Mahomes was behind him, and you ran a read option to Xavier Worthy.
You know what's
funny,
though?
They're doing crazy things out of the box.
But he's earned that. You know damn well how this fan base would react if he tried something like that and it
didn't
work.
They did it in the Super Bowl and it worked. They had a double pass, yep, right, for a touchdown.
They did. They did. And it was one of the scarier plays I've ever watched in my entire life. It was.
Touchdown.
Yeah, touchdown. It didn't look like it was supposed to look. Remember, it was herky-jerky, and then it ended up working out. And so that's fine. But sure. That's the way you get to act when you have three rings and you have the face of the league at quarterback. You can be brash. You can do silly stuff. You can blow an AFC championship game and nobody cares.
Yeah.
They did. They did. They didn't kick the field goal against the Bengals at the end of the first half. And they got arrogant. And the Chiefs get to do this. They are super arrogant. But who's the coach that we call arrogant?
It's
not Andy. We don't call Andy arrogant, but he's out here flipping balls behind his back. His tight end is doing pirouettes and throwing balls. We're skipping out on field goals and losing AFC title games, and nothing sticks. Nobody would ever call him arrogant. Why? Because they've earned that.
Yeah,
they've
earned rings.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, I get it. If what you many of you are saying is, watch these two coaches on the sideline this weekend. One of them looks like Santa Claus and he's fat and happy, and the other one looks like he's getting old really fast. Kyle Shanahan looks like he's aging 5 years every year right now. And a big part of it is this. It's the lack of success in some of these very key at the end of game and end of season moments, and so he has not built up that slack with the audience that Andy has.
But he can't coach tight because he's built up that slack with his bosses. So, and his owner and his GM, who's not really his boss, but for the sake of the argument, he is his boss, he's built that up. So go ahead, let your hair down, and coach like you did in the Super Bowl. Go ahead and make big plays. It's week 7 in the NFL. Who cares if you lose, honestly? Like, losing the Super Bowl is a lot bigger.
A lot of people.
But I don't care about a lot of people,
and the players care. But the players care.
The players care, but go out there and do something creative. Go out there and try to win this game as opposed to try not to lose it. And that, for me, is a big criticism of Shanahan, and everybody wants to pin the Super Bowl on him when he was the coordinator, and it's 28-3. And honestly, he is criticized for being too aggressive there. You know, you threw it. You should have just run it.
And he's been tremendously aggressive this year. I don't think you could look at Kyle and be like, dude, loosen up the unbutton your top button. Guy's going for it on fourth down like crazy.
More than ever.
Right?
Yeah.
They're pushing the ball downfield, and this is a fact more than any team in the NFL. So, like, I don't know if that's necessarily the issue. And by the way, I think it would almost be bothersome to 49er fans if this weekend you feel like you need gadget plays to win. 49er fans would like to believe what I know they do believe, which is that we have the best roster. And if you have the best roster, why you got to get all tricky? Why you got to get all crazy? Why can't you just line up and beat them? Nobody's heard of any Chiefs.
Doesn't matter.
Patrick, Travis, what? And why can't you just line up and beat them?
Because they have a good defense, and that's not the way
so
it goes.
So do you.
Yeah, you do. But if you think about last year in the Super Bowl, your touchdown that you scored was a trick play.
I get it.
I mean, other than that, you didn't score a touchdown.
But that doesn't answer the question. The question is, why can't you just line up and beat them? You have better players than they do.
See, I disagree with that.
You do?
Their defensive front is better than your offensive line.
That's one aspect of the football game.
That is the aspect, though.
No,
if you talk about like...
Your defensive line is better than their offensive line.
That I don't know.
Well...
I don't know about that.
Why, isn't it? Like, the Chiefs are the ones that get accused of false starting on every play. They're the ones that get accused of holding on every play. Why are they doing that? Because Nick Bosa has performed better than
them.
Right,
and we can talk about the refs, and I'm not here for that because ultimately... The calls are the calls, and if you think that the Chiefs get better calls than the Niners do, you're probably right, but ultimately, it doesn't matter because the Lombardi goes to the team that wins the game, not the team that should have gotten more calls but didn't get more calls.
I'm not getting into that. There's been a national narrative from people who played the game who are frustrated with the way Chiefs games are officiated this year.
Yeah.
Forget Niner games. Chiefs games this year. You know that. That's been a thing. But I'm asking the question in a different way. Like, I don't even care about the refs. Why can't you line up and beat this team? They have, especially now, on offense this year, they've got a great quarterback, one of the greatest. They have a great tight end who is aging and not as good as he used
played
to be.
Played great last week.
Last week. How about
2 weeks
first,
ago.
How about the first four?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, well, it does.
Didn't need to play like that because
aging.
They had wide receivers.
They do not have players who, in theory, on paper, should be able to run all over the field on you. You should be able to line up and beat this team. And I'm not even disagreeing with you.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, why can't they? You got the top contract at every position. You got all the analytics in your favor. You're favored. You're the PFF fancy deep dive analytic team that's supposedly still the best team in football. Why can't you line up and beat this team?
Because they're better than you.
No.
And that is, you know, not to tip my pick. And finally, all of you haters and fade the dibbers, you're probably going to be happy with my pick. And, well, the jury's still out. Don't clap yet.
He hasn't made it yet.
But I am definitely leaning toward the visitors. Although, 1 point... Whatever. Dude.
Yeah, you're picking
Stupid.
A winner. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full-service banking with no compromises. We're live at the Madden compound for the release of the book Mornings with Madden by the great Stan Bunger. And speaking of the great, one of the most energetic speakers you'll ever hear, and he's a big part of today's event, and he's going to join us next, is Steve Mariucci. That's coming up on Willard and Dibbs.